Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
And welcome back. Tim Wildman, Ed Vitagliano, Fred Jackson, and Steve Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
Folks, do want to remind you, as Tim mentioned last hour, next, 2 weeks, not next week, but the week after, is Share-a-thon. It is our April Share-a-thon, our spring Share-a-thon. And so we encourage you to be checking in for that. We depend on our listeners to support this ministry so that we can stay on the air. So that will be coming up in 2 weeks. So just a little reminder, please be praying for Share-a-thon. We pray here for Share-a-thon. We ask our listeners to pray as well that God would provide what we need, and abundantly beyond what we can think or ask. So
need to correct one thing you said.
Sure.
It's Steve Paisley Jordahl.
Yes, Steve Paisley Jordahl.
I was about ready to cry.
Right. You. Anyway, I've given him that moniker.
It's stuck, too.
It's stuck. People mail him Paisley shirts and stuff like that.
I know we have had people come to visit,
yeah,
and they say, hey, is JJ here? Is Steve Paisley Jordahl here? So it is a nickname that has stuck.
And Steve's car is actually a Paisley.
Paisley
his automobile. His automobile is covered in Paisley, so I'm just kidding about that. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred's here with us. Fred, Ed, Tim, and Steve. Steve, what's your first story?
Well, we had an interesting hearing yesterday. The heads of the nation's top public broadcasting systems services came to the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. And
what committee?
The House Oversight and Government Reform Subcommittee.
Okay.
And so it was Catherine Marr is the president of NPR, and Paula Kerger,
National Public Radio,
is president of Public Broadcasting System, PBS. And they both took some heat. I'll give you some of the highlights, but Ms. Marr had, I think, probably the hardest time of it. So I want you to hear a little bit about this. This is when one of the representatives, and I'll tell you who it is when I hear the voice, asked Catherine Marr about the Hunter laptop story. First of all, the whole Republican thing is you're biased, you shouldn't get the money. No, we're not biased. Well, tell me about the Hunter Biden thing, Cut 11.
First of all, I do want to say that NPR acknowledges that we were mistaken in failing to cover the Hunter Biden laptop story more aggressively and sooner.
It's unfortunate that NPR ignored the Hunter Biden laptop story.
Congressman, I would love to say that we actually believe we made a mistake on the Hunter Biden laptop story.
Okay, so the lady you just heard from there is the president or director, I don't know what her proper
president is her title,
of National Public Radio. Notorious, quite frankly, for their liberal bias. And so she's called on it here by some Republican congressmen, and she's admitting that, at least in that case, the Hunter Biden case, they made a big mistake by not covering it.
It was the only admission she made because the Republican congressman brought the receipts. At one point, one of the House members asked Ms. Marr, there was a book, it was written by a whistleblower out of PBS. His name was Uri Berliner. And they had a lot of material in that to ask Catherine Marr about. And one of the things was Uri Berliner did a poll of editors in the Washington, D.C. area of the NPR. 57 Democrats, 0 Republicans. And you say you're not biased. No, we're not biased.
What did she say in response to that?
No, we're not biased. One of the congressmen asked, how many times did your network have who's the congressman from California, now senator?
I don't know. Schiff, I can't help you there.
Schiff.
Oh, yeah, Adam Schiff.
Adam Schiff.
I'm sorry. He asked, how many interviews did you do with Adam Schiff about Russiagate? I don't know. Well, would 13 sound about right? I guess it could be. How many interviews did you do with anybody about the Hunter Biden laptop story or Russia or any of the other things? Zero. So the fact that they are, you know, making an admission on one, it doesn't quite cut it. They're not. So the Republicans laid out the allegations of bias. Democrats kind of, you see, the purpose of the hearing was actually DOGE. And do we continue funding NPR and PBS out of, or is DOGE going to take some of the money away? And so the Democrats just spent their time ragging on DOGE and,
well,
on Musk.
All right, listen. Public broadcasting was initially created by the federal government, I want to say in the 60s, but it was back in that era. And the idea was we need to have more, we need to be able to get the news and then with the children's shows, educational programming to the masses, right, in America who are underserved. This is one of the missions, or if not the main mission.
Well before the internet and cable.
Right. And the idea of public broadcasting, be it both TV and radio. National Public Radio, for example, which is, you can go down the dial from where we are right now and pick up National Public Radio. They're usually from 88.1 to 91.9 on the FM dial, right where a lot of our American family radio stations are located. Anyway, but that day of has long since passed. I don't mind if National Public Radio or public, what do you call it, the public broadcasting?
Public broadcasting system.
They want to exist, fine. But don't take tax dollars. Mm-hmm. Just do your own fundraising like we do. And they get a lot of donations from corporations.
Mm-hmm.
The public broadcasting folks have.
Yeah.
You worked in Canada for...
public broadcasting for about 20 years.
Yeah.
When I first started, way back in the 70s, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation radio was run by a bunch of ex-BBC people. They would check your work, and if they saw any bias, this doesn't go on the air. It all changed in the 80s with new leaders that came in, and basically we're going to hire all left-wingers, and we're going to let them project their bias in their stories. It just changed 180 degrees.
Let me just give you an up-to-date example of what you're talking about, Fred. Our writers for our magazine, The Stand,
mm-hmm.
We're thinking of allowing them to take a short course on writing.
Mm-hmm.
It would be remote here through Associated Press.
Right.
So our editor, Rebecca Davis, sent me the topics that will be discussed. Okay. Now, we haven't decided. There's still probably a lot of good stuff that they can learn from this. But one of the sessions is about the lie of journalistic objectivity and why that has been jettisoned as a requirement for journalism. And I thought, that would be shocking.
They're saying if the I hadn't, quiet yeah, part out loud.
Yes, say the quiet part out loud. If I hadn't been hearing what you've been talking about for years and years, how it used to be that journalists were supposed to be objective, but that changed,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, the last 10, 20 years to the principle that journalists should be agents of change.
That is right.
In the culture, rather than simply objectively reporting.
In fact, I wrote an article for the what was then called the Journal.
Yes.
And the title of the article is Agents of Change.
Yeah.
That's what they believe. And that's why the surveys that have been done of the mainstream journalists in this country, over 90% vote Democrat.
Yes.
So they're locked together.
It's an echo chamber for a lot of them. That's why when Fox News came on the scene, they just gained so much viewership. They just immediately took over the top spot in cable news because there was nobody else giving the conservative viewpoint. They were all liberal.
Right.
Yes.
And because it's groupthink with these, with a lot of these folks. Let me just give you one other example, and then we'll move on here. I'm reading from the National Review website, and they're talking about Miss, what's her, Marr?
Marr.
Catherine
She's
Marr.
No kin to Bill, right?
Not that we know.
Okay. So the article in the National Review about her appearance yesterday before Congress, they say, when the New York Post first reported on Hunter Biden's laptop hard drive ahead of the 2020 presidential election, NPR ignored it and disregarded the facts at play, one of the congressmen said. Okay, so this is what the... I'm about to quote to you what then managing editor Terrence Samuels, then the NPR's managing editor,
right,
said in October 2020 about the laptop story, Hunter Biden laptop story. This is what Terrence Samuels said then, quote, "We don't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories. And we don't want to waste the listeners' and readers' time on stories that are just pure distractions." Okay, well, as turns out, yesterday, acting president made a public apology for not covering that story. But at the time, they were trying to make it, they were towing the liberal Democrat line, saying it's not worthy of coverage. That affected the election in some ways.
Yeah, and let me just say this, too, that I'm not even sure she apologized yesterday. She said,
admitted they made a mistake.
We made a mistake. And let me tell you the difference, okay, between saying you're wrong and saying you made a mistake. If I forget our anniversary, my wife and I, all right, I don't come to her and say, hey, I made a mistake. We all make mistakes. Let's just move on. Okay. No, I say, I'm sorry. I was wrong. And to me, that's a pretty big difference on the way that Ms. Marr responded.
By the way, Ms. Marr in the past has referred to President Trump as, quote, a deranged racist sociopath, end quote.
What does that mean, though?
That's,
I mean, I can't parse those words.
There's a 56% chance she didn't vote for him.
56.
Well, she also called for reparations.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yes.
On racial.
And she argued with what that meant because she said, no, I didn't. And then the congressman who was questioning her said, well, here's the tweet you tweeted. And she did. And she said, well, that's not necessarily. And then she went into.
Yeah, she said that's not what I meant. What I said was not what I meant. Anyway, next story, Steve. Time. What's your next story?
All right. There is a significant buildup of American stealth bombers in the Indian Ocean. Now, I don't have any war plans here unless Tim, you were included on a signal chat about this.
Bada boom.
You weren't? No, okay.
No, I wasn't. Okay. I don't want to be. I got enough trouble of my own. That's what the Bible says.
Well, according to TWZ, a significant force of B-2 Spirit stealth bombers are looking to be currently winding their way to the Indian Ocean island of Diego Garcia. And they are also there with support crew of a C-17 cargo planes, aerial refueling tankers, and the whole bit. So why would they be in the Indian Ocean? Well, the closest enemy of proximity to that would be Iran. So there's a lot of talk that perhaps as Iran is on the verge, if they don't already have a nuclear bomb, that something has to be done. And this would be done in conjunction with Israel, almost certainly.
And Diego Garcia is a well-known base, naval base. I think Air Force uses it. I think the UK uses it as well. It's for forward deployment of combat forces. And the fact, when you mentioned this in our story meeting, I was a little concerned because sending B-2 bombers as well as the support craft that allow them to fly these missions is either a simple warning to Iran to get them to back off, like with the Houthis in Yemen, a radical Islamic group in Yemen that Iran supports financially, or it is actually preparation for some sort of bombing inside Iran should Israel decide to attack.
So these are stealth bombers. So I'm assuming if they wanted to surprise Iran with a real attack, that they could have flown these things in at night stealth-wise, and probably no one would have noticed. The fact that it's in the news suggests to me it's more the first thing, warning.
Well, yeah, we'll have to pay attention to what happens there. Let me ask you this, switching topics real quickly. We failed to mention this story yesterday because we just didn't have time. This congresswoman from Texas, her name is Representative Jasmine
Crockett.
Either see the Jasmine or Jasmine, I'm not sure. Crockett.
Jasmine. Yeah.
Jasmine?
Yeah. Jasmine Crockett.
Jasmine Crockett. She's from the Dallas area. Do we have any audio on her yesterday?
I'm asking Brent to go back to yesterday's list.
Okay, so she is the Democrat congresswoman from Dallas. And she's getting a reputation for her rhetoric, okay?
Yeah.
Her hyper—I don't know what you would call it—sensational rhetoric she's using,
right,
against Republicans. And when you get criticized by women on The View, and you're a liberal, maybe you might want to consider that you've crossed the line here. She was talking about, if we have it, let me know, this quote, she called her governor of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott, who we all know, we have that? Okay, well, we'll just hear from the congresswoman herself. Go ahead.
Because we in these hot Texas streets, honey. Y'all know we got Governor Hot Wheels down there. Come on now. And the only thing hot about him is that he is a hot mess, honey. So,
all right, stop right there. Listen, I don't know if she thinks she's a stand-up comedian or what there, and I don't know the audience she's speaking to.
To the HRC, Human Rights Campaign.
Human Rights Campaign?
Yeah.
They're the LGBT group. Governor Abbott is disabled and has to use a wheelchair 24/7 or when he gets around, right?
Yes.
What did he have? Some kind of...
A tree fell on him while he was jogging.
An accident.
Yes.
A tree, yeah.
And so she refers to him as Governor Hot Wheels.
Yeah.
She's making... This is kind of interesting because she's speaking to a group who exists to...
So that
gay and lesbian people are not made fun of,
right?
Part of the Human Rights Campaign. So she's speaking to them, and she's making fun, Ed, of a gentleman who is disabled. She calls him Governor Hot Wheels, and then she tries to say she didn't mean anything by it.
Yeah, she's attempted to explain that she was not referring to him being in a wheelchair.
The lamest excuse ever.
Yeah, and nobody's really buying the explanation. So the question then becomes, well, should she apologize? She does not strike me as the kind of personality that is going to apologize. She's very bombastic. She frequently goes right to the edge with her language being provocative. And she's insulting to the opposing political party. It seems clear to me that she was mocking the fact that the governor's in a wheelchair and got plenty of laughs at the HRC gathering.
I don't know. Could anybody else make fun of a person who's disabled in this way and get away with it?
No, if this was all flipped.
If it were a Republican making fun of a Democrat governor as being Governor of Hot Wheels, do you think that Republican would be able to get away with it without an apology? She didn't want to even issue an apology.
No.
Well, and her explanation included, she said, the fact that the president has mocked disabled people in the past, and that's highly debatable.
Right?
Yeah, that's... That's not much of an explanation.
She said, we let's hear, just hear that one more time, because I it's hard for me to, let's hear what she said to this group.
Because we in these hot Texas streets, honey. Y'all know we got Governor Hot Wheels down there. Come on now. And the only thing hot about him is that he is a hot mess, honey. So,
honey is...
Her explanation was...
The group that she's calling them honey, right? Am I right?
I got something to say about this when Ned's done.
Well, I was just going to say, she's insisting that the remark referred to... I'm looking at an article from The Hill. I can't find an exact quote, but she insists that the remark referred to Abbott's habit of busing migrants to northern cities.
Although
that's why she called him.
She did like and use the Hot Wheels before he started doing that.
Yes.
I saw a video of Jasmine Crockett while she was running for Congress. She had the most proper English, zero accent, you know, sounded very educated and everything. And now she's in Congress and, you know, all of a sudden
she's
real
using, I would call it slang. Kind of ghetto slang.
Yep.
That's what you want to call it. How they talk that's just, she's talking like a black woman talks who's trying to talk like a black woman who's mocking something.
I call people honey. And so, listen. Everyone
instead
knows,
of talking more officially, I guess you could say.
I'm heading to HR after this.
Why did I offend you? Oh, yeah, it offended you?
No, you called me honey.
I guess.
Oh, you called him
honey all the time. No, listen. She is aiming to become one of the leading voices in the Democratic Party. And to me, that's the explanation for what you're talking about, Tim, that she started off when she was running as a polished politician.
Right.
And now she's trying to be provocative, because guess what? Her visibility has skyrocketed over the last couple of months.
She's the Texas AOC.
Yeah. She's aiming.
She's AOC brisket.
Yeah. But they are the voice of what many in the Democratic Party now want to be out front, representing the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Well, she's kind of taken up. What was the congresswoman from Houston who was kind of like this, but she passed away last year?
Jackson, Congresswoman Jackson.
Sheila Jackson Lee.
Yeah. So anyway,
did she take her seat?
No.
No. She's
Dallas.
She's from Dallas. Crockett's from Dallas. Okay. She was from Houston. But anyway, listen. You just can't make fun of people who are in wheelchairs. I don't care if you're white, black, yellow.
Did President Trump? I don't remember President Trump.
There was that one time that they said he made fun of a...
like someone with palsy or something?
A reporter who had cerebral palsy or something like that. And he may have.
Listen, if he did, that's wrong.
That's wrong, yeah. All she needed to do was say, that was a... I shouldn't have done that. It was a mistake.
I got carried away.
I should not make fun of people with disabilities, and I apologize. And I've written the governor apologizing.
Yeah.
Next question. That's all
to
you need
to
do.
To me, that gets you more political street cred, if you will, with the party than doubling down.
That's right, honey. All right. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Fred, Ed, Chris, Steve, Brent, Creeley, our producer. And
William Avery.
That's right, for being on the show. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.